What's been making news this week? Tony Allen joins us. And Tony Allen, the big news for agriculture is the sacking of the top job.
Yes, out with the old, in with the new, not just a new government, but a new head of the Agriculture Department as well. Andrew Metcalfe took up his role as the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry only at the end of January this year, but he was one of three department heads dumped as soon as the new government was sworn in on Wednesday. And there's quite a deal of shock in the industry, agricultural industries, not to mention the ALP, about the dumping of Mr. Metcalfe. He had spent 30 years in the public service working with Labor and coalition governments and had spent almost a decade heading the immigration department. We've had a few eulogies for him. The Australian Livestock Exporters Council says Mr. Metcalfe was very professional, good to deal with. The cherry growers put out a special press release about him saying that he helped them get access to markets in Asia. And the former agriculture minister, Labor minister, Joel Fitzgibbon, says Mr. Metcalfe was professional, diligent, hardworking, talented and innovative.
He was, I thought, broadly respected right across the political spectrum. He played the game straight. He was very good at what he did. I can't understand why the new government would want to move him on. I do suspect it has a little to do with his time in immigration and his robust defence of the government's policy at that time.
He might be onto something there.
Yes, I think so. Now, we will delve a little further into this story later on Country Breakfast, but the new Minister for Trade and Investment, Andrew Robb, is looking to China pretty quickly.
Yes, I think the first thing to note is that Andrew Robb is a Liberal. Trade has traditionally gone to the Nationals, but not in this case. So he is a former chief executive of the National Farmers Federation, so he's well equipped to handle farm issues, but he does have a more Liberal attitude, less restrictive attitude on foreign investment to most of the Nationals. He wants to get free trade agreements sealed up, and he says China is seeking the same treatment on foreign investment that Australia gives to the United States. Now, under the US-Australia Free Trade Agreement, American business investment can be up to $1 billion before it needs approval from the Foreign Investment Review Board. That's a privileged position because other countries, the threshold's just $240 million, about a quarter of that. Mr. Robb says China's case is in the mix, to quote, but no deal's been done yet. And he's not expecting trouble within the coalition, even though the Nationals want that Foreign Investment Review Board threshold lowered to only $15 million.
There's always people with strong views. We've got an established position, and we'll work with that. Look, I really feel that there is enormous opportunity that has not been captured. Now, if we can seal these free trade agreements, the biggest beneficiaries in Australia, the biggest beneficiaries by far, will be a range of horticultural and agricultural industries.
The other one that's going to be interesting to watch is that Archer Daniels Midland attempted takeover of GrainCorp, an American company with one of our largest grain traders. Now, the incoming federal industry minister is thinking that natural gas is a priority.
Yes, they want to restart the mining boom, they say, and they don't have a mining minister, strangely enough, or a resources minister or an energy minister. They just have an industry minister, Ian McFarlane, whose portfolio will cover all those things. And he's made it very clear he wants New South Wales farmers to rethink their opposition to coal seam gas.
But I'm not interested in noisy protesters, minority groups with no interest in the development of regional Australia and the economic progress of agriculture and mining together, who simply want to politicise this issue and tell lies.
Tell us what you really think.
So there.
Take that. I love this next story, having a ban on factory farming when it doesn't actually happen there anyway.
Yes, legislation introduced to the ACT Legislative Assembly this week would make the ACT the first jurisdiction in the country to legislate against factory farming. The bill is expected to pass the Assembly in the next month on the votes of Labor and the Greens, who have a parliamentary agreement there. Greens Minister Shane Rattenbury introduced the bill, which would prohibit battery cages, sow stalls and farrowing crates in the ACT. Well, it's pretty effective because they haven't got any of the above in the ACT at the moment. The nearest piggery, for example, is at Murrum Bateman across the border. And they used to have a battery egg farm, but that has since shut down, well, partly shut down, and it's been converted to barn eggs. So it's not really an issue, but Mr. Rattenbury says the laws are still necessary.
And this is now the fifth bill as part of those attempts, and I'm very pleased that this one will finally pass through the Assembly. Now, these are both practices that are considered cruel, and for many consumers don't meet modern expectations about how they want their food produced.
Nothing like a community fete to raise funds, but it's a rather sorry state of affairs when it's to prevent what could destroy the horticulture industry.
Dr. Dennis Anderson is Australia's leading bee researcher and spent a long time working for the CSIRO. His aim is to find the chemical trigger that bees could use to protect themselves from the varroa mite, or the varroa destructor mite, as it's called. And if that mite got into Australia, they reckon their honey and the pollination industry could lose $70 million a year because all the feral bees would be killed. So he wants to find this chemical trigger that the bees can protect themselves from the mite, but he says he needs $10 million in research funding to do it. And he's left the CSIRO to establish his own company called Bees Down Under, and it's begging for funds from places like Community Fates and fashion magazines so he can keep his research going. He says the CSIRO failed to get him enough funding from the horticulture industry.
The horticultural industry does contribute funds into a research fund controlled under the roof of the Rural Industries Research and Development Corporation, but the amount of money is still pittance at $300,000 a year.
And beekeepers in Tasmania are threatening to revolt, but over a different issue.
Tasmania is currently GM-free. You cannot grow genetically modified crops in Tasmania, and a lot of people argue that gives the state a particular advantage in export markets. But the Tasmanian government, which is a Greens-Labor alliance, is reviewing the ban at the moment. The beekeepers are not happy. They are threatening to pollinate certain vegetable crops, they won't say exactly what, if the state's moratorium on GM food production is lifted. They say that would cost the vegetable industry millions of dollars a year. Lindsay Burke is the president of the Tasmanian Beekeepers Association, and he says the honey industry in the state needs this non-GM status for access to European and Asian markets.
One of the vegetable crops that we pollinate will be devastated because we won't go anywhere near it. We won't go and pollinate those crops if there is a GMO crop alongside that. We will go and produce honey.
Who'd have thought that Century Mine had been so aptly named?
Yeah, the Century Mine, which is owned by the MMG company, is Australia's biggest open-cut zinc mine. It's in northwest Queensland, and it's due to run out of ore in 2015 or slightly after that. So, according to law, they have to rehabilitate the mine, return the site to its natural state. It's going to be one of the first attempts in the world to rehabilitate a base metal mine of this scale, and it could take, believe it or not, 120 years, so more than a century, to get rid of the signs of the Century Mine. MMG's Matt Lord says the 340-metre hole that they got the zinc out of will never completely disappear.
We will allow that pit to fill with water from the natural groundwater, and we'll also speed up the process by pushing some of our evaporation water back into the pit. But the modelling we've done to date suggests it'll probably take around 100 to 120 years for that pit to reach its maximum level, which will still be at least 20 metres lower than the surrounding topography.
Now, someone's getting a rough end of the pineapple here.
Yes, man versus machine is, so what, you know, what about man versus pineapple? A bloke called Robert Pace, I'd like to say he ran rings around the opposition and crushed them, but I won't. He knocked the tops off 65 pieces of fruit in only 30 seconds at the annual Pineapple Festival at Rolling Stone, north of Townsville.
So that's more than two pineapples a second.
Oh, I'll take your word for that, yeah. And John Muller from the local Lions Club says Mr. Pace might have been the winner in the pineapple topping competition, but the real winners were the community and the pineapple industry. Thousands of people came together to celebrate the pineapple.
We've had the pineapple dash today, so we've had the pineapple throw. But this is the chance now for the individuals to show how good they are with their detopping. And I know that in some of the packing sheds and on the farms, at the end of the day when they're a little bit tired and had a couple of refreshments, then they challenge each other and see how good they are. So this is a chance to show the community how good they are.
I can see it now. At the end of the day, they're a bit tired and emotional. Let's knock the top off a few pineapples.
Well, I'm not going to.
I reckon they probably knocked the tops off a few beers first.
This next one, I bags not kissing the winner of the garlic eating competition.
Yes, while we're on horticulture competitions, I must conclude by mentioning that a British man has taken out the first prize in the annual, world's first annual World Garlic Eating Competition in the southwest English county of Dorset. He ate 49 garlic cloves. The competitors had to eat as many pre-peeled cloves as possible in 5 minutes. And the lucky winner was Oliver Farmer, and he took home the big prize of $173. I guess that's about £100. I don't know.
Awful.
I think you'd have to pay me more to eat because 49 garlic cloves.
Yeah, and they would have been raw.
Yeah.
Yeah, ugh. Ugh, ugh, ugh.
The world record apparently is about 34 in 1 minute held by a man in
Well,
Nepal.
As someone who is fructose intolerant, I can't even countenance the whole concept. Tony Allen, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Tony Allen with this week's Rural News. Rural Reporter is next.